Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashley Wehner. In today's episode, supported by Genentech, we had the pleasure of speaking with Kamal Jhaveri, MD, FACP, about the clinical use of inavolisib for patients with hormone receptor positive, PIK3CA mutated, locally advanced or metastatic breast cancer. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Jhaveri discussed the importance of having a PI3 kinase inhibitor available for the treatment of patients with HR-positive metastatic breast cancer, advice for managing inavolisib-related adverse effects, and best practices for early biomarker testing in patients with breast cancer.
What is the significance of having this PI3 kinase inhibitor available for the treatment of patients with this disease?
Yeah, so the INAVO120 study really is an unprecedented way of treating first-line patients whose tumors harbor PIK3CA mutations. So these are really patients who had progression or recurrence on or within 12 months of their adjuvant endocrine therapy. So traditionally, we would have treated these patients with fulvestrant and a CDK4/6 inhibitor. Now, in this study, what we did that we kept those patients as the control arm, which is our standard of care. And if the tumors harbor PIK3CA mutation, we added a third medication. And in this case, it was an alpha-specific mutant degrader, PI3K inhibitor, which is inavolisib. Now, an important fact about that is that while preclinically we understand that there is synergistic activity when you combine a PI3K inhibitor with a CDK4/6 inhibitor and endocrine therapy, in clinic, we've not been able to achieve safety with a triplet regimen because, as expected, the toxicity has come in the way. So this was attempted with alpelisib, which we all know is already approved, an alpha-specific PI3K inhibitor. We used that in the second-line metastatic setting in clinic. We got approval based on the SOLAR-1 study, which was 6% of CDK4/6 pretreated patients, but then we had the open-label non-randomized BILEAD trial as well, which showed activity for alpelisib post-CDK4/6. So that's where we've been traditionally using these agents, and we have capivasertib now approved for PI3K, AKT, and PTEN alterations. Again, we used them post-CDK4/6. But this triplet strategy is building upon the preclinical data that preclinically there is synergy for a triplet, and importantly, that synergy translated into a good safety and efficacious profile in the phase one setting, which led to the development of the phase three registrational INAVO120 study. So these are patients with PIK3CA mutations, majority detected with the ctDNA, which kind of tells you that these are high tumor burden patients where, you know, the tumors are spilling these mutations in the blood that can be detected in the ctDNA. And they have recurred on or within 12 months of their endocrine therapy, which is why the control arm is appropriate for fulvestrant and a CDK4/6 inhibitor. They were randomized 1:1, and the primary endpoint was investigator-assessed PFS. And what we saw was there was a near doubling of PFS from 7 months to nearly 15 months with the addition of inavolisib to fulvestrant and palbociclib. And so really, this is something that we had never seen before. And it was very sobering to even realize that your control arm had a progression-free survival of 7 months, and the overall survival for the control arm was in the order of 30 months and had not reached for the inavolisib arm. The hazard ratio was 0.64, so it was trending well, but statistical significance at that time could not be claimed because it had not crossed the pre-specified boundary. But more recently, on January 27th, we got a press release from Genentech Roche that kind of highlighted that this trial has now also met its overall survival endpoint. And based on the press release, that was also statistically significant and clinically meaningful. And we're eagerly awaiting to see the details of those data set to be presented at the upcoming ASCO meeting, hopefully.
What is the safety profile of this agent?
While we were expecting that that could be, you know, something that we might struggle with, at least in this INAVO120 study, the discontinuation rates were rather low, in the order of 6.5%. And that was predominantly related to inavolisib. So we did see some common toxicities that you would expect, such as hyperglycemia. The hyperglycemia grade 3 or 4 rates were low. We did see some stomatitis. In the control arm, the stomatitis rates were about 26-27% with palbociclib and fulvestrant, which was higher with the addition of inavolisib. But again, we did not have mandatory dexamethasone mouthwashes utilized, and there were very few grade 3 or 4 adverse events. Similarly, diarrhea, all grade was also C, but very few patients with grade 3 or 4 diarrhea. And interestingly, unlike what we see with alpelisib and capivasertib, there were no grade 3 or 4 rash reported with inavolisib, which is something that we had also noticed in the phase 1 program. So really, we do see some hyperglycemia despite the strict criteria or the relatively strict criteria that were utilized for eligibility in this trial with a hemoglobin A1C of less than 6% and a fasting blood glucose of less than 126 milligrams per deciliter. We still see some all-grade hyperglycemia. So something that we really still have to watch out for our patients in clinic. But fortunately, the grade 3 or 4, at least here, were lower. And the discontinuation rates, which is really very important to recognize, was low in the order of 6.5% despite 3 drugs in the first-line metastatic setting. So overall, I would say an efficacious regimen, certainly important for this group of patients who are recurring on or within 12 months of endocrine therapy and have a PIK3CA mutation based on the PFS benefit, the OS benefit, and a reasonable safety profile.
Do you have any advice for colleagues about monitoring or mitigating these adverse effects such as hyperglycemia and stomatitis and the other ones that you mentioned?
Absolutely. I think what we have learned as a community to manage hyperglycemia with this class of drugs has been lifestyle modification changes and interventions such as, you know, anti-hyperglycemic medications as quickly as possible. So if I have a patient where I'm worried about hyperglycemia, and this is predominantly patients who might be overweight or obese or who have a high BMI, and certainly we also test now hemoglobin A1C is to see if the hemoglobin A1C is in the pre-diabetic or diabetic range, that's the patient I'm really concerned about in terms of developing high-grade hyperglycemias or struggling with hyperglycemia management. So that's where I would want to know that data. I would want to start them on metformin. I would want to really encourage lifestyle modifications and make sure patients are communicating back to us and provide them with the optimal support that they need, whether it's from nutrition perspective, whether it's from intervention perspective or monitoring perspective, so we can guide them such that we can then keep them on this drug for a longer period of time and therefore derive the benefit that the drug is set out to do. One thing I had mentioned was stomatitis. And as I said, the trial did not necessarily mandate utilizing dexamethasone mouthwashes, but we now are used to using that for patients when we start them on everolimus, for example. So this would be important for this regimen as well as a triplet, where we could guide our patients to start them on dexamethasone mouthwashes when they start. We should at least educate them about diarrhea and antidiarrheals and diet modifications for diarrhea should they struggle. So antidiarrheals such as Imodium itself or loperamide itself could be helpful to keep in mind and making sure our patients are educated about. And of course, communication back to us if they have diarrhea, rash, hyperglycemia, or stomatitis that we can help them manage better.
What is the importance of early biomarker testing for patients with breast cancer, and what should colleagues keep in mind, particularly when testing patients in the frontline setting here?
Certainly, this is a change in many ways, right? Because so far, majority of our patients are eligible for AI CDK4/6, and then there is a proportion of these patients who get fulvestrant CDK4/6 if they're recurring on or within 12 months of endocrine therapy. And when they progress on their first-line CDK4/6 is when we were doing biomarker testing more so to offer them either elacestrant for ESR1 mutations or capivasertib or alpelisib for PIK3 mutations, capivasertib for PIK3 AKT or P10. Or for non-biomarkers, we had options such as everolimus with endocrine therapy, or maybe in some cases a CDK4/6 inhibitor continuation after switching, perhaps to abemaciclib, if you will, and endocrine therapy. But with this data set now in the first line, this has become very, very important that we remind ourselves that given this unprecedented near doubling of progression-free survival, now this overall survival press release, that we absolutely not miss a patient who is otherwise a candidate for, say, fulvestrant with a CDK4/6 inhibitor. So anybody who's recurring on or within 12 months, I would certainly say we should test for a PI3K mutation so that we can justify the triplet regimen in the first-line metastatic setting. And the testing could be tissue and or plasma. So usually what happens is when patients are either diagnosed newly with metastatic disease, it's either a de novo diagnosis or a diagnosis that has happened with recurrent disease, somebody who's had early stage diagnosis and now has recurred. For this patient to get inavolisib, they need to fall into that recurrent category, because for de novo necessarily, we don't know if this triplet is as attractive yet. hopefully trials such as INAVA 123, which is trying to address that question, will address that for more group of patients. But for this group of patients, which are recurring on or within 12 months, I think it's important that we think about the tissue test because we're already doing a metastatic biopsy. So that can be happening. But we could also consider a liquid testing, which can be as quick as 7 to 8 business days if we can send a ctDNA sample and determine if they have a PI3K mutation. So you could get them started, say, on fulvestrant, and by the time in a week you have the results about PI3K or not, you know if you want to just continue treating them with a CDK4/6 inhibitor if they don't have the PI3K mutation, or add inavolisib to the regimen because they have been determined to have a PI3K mutation. So very important for us to now think about this particular patient population to justify this very important data set that has made a big difference in terms of PFS and OS. There is the very interesting data that is now going to be hopefully, you know, continue to develop in this space for triplet regimens. I think this trial has in a way ignited a interest, a confirmation, a reassuring, you know, effort that triplet regimens are not necessarily all going to be toxic, and there could be the right triplet regimens that could justify improved efficacy with a balanced safety profile or a manageable safety profile. We look forward to efforts such as CAPItello-292, for instance, which is also addressing this similar question with capivasertib being considered. Now, in that trial, it's all comers. We're allowing not only just the PI3K AKT P10 altered patients, but also all comer patients. And it does allow one line of chemotherapy. So slightly different than the INAVA 120 eligibility criteria, but still predominantly in the first line metastatic setting. So we look forward to seeing what that trial would offer. That trial is allowing not just palbociclib as a CDK4/6 inhibitor, but has also been amended to allow ribociclib as an agent as well. So very important to see what such efforts would look like. In addition, I think in the field, we're also evaluating mutant-selective PI3K inhibitors. I think the challenge we were talking about with hyperglycemia is predominantly thought to be related to inhibition of the PI3K wild type. And so the question is, if we were to spare this wild type, could we have an agent which is selectively a mutant inhibitor of the PI3K and the P10 alpha? Would that then lead to better hyperglycemia rates or less grade 3 for hyperglycemia and either have better or at least similar efficacy? And such efforts are already in clinic. We have data from the Relay compound, Relay-2608, where we saw a median PFS of 9.2 months with fulvestrant. And the hope is that that will be studied in a phase 3 head-to-head with capivasertib, or at least that was a plan that was laid out by Relay Pharmaceuticals. Similarly, Scorpion Therapeutics has their compound, STX-478, in phase 1 clinical trials. And the idea would be if that experiment of having a better toxicity profile goes through with doublets, the triplets would look even more attractive even with those drugs. Maybe with even better toxicity profiles, and maybe that might translate into better efficacy as well. So more coming in this space, but certainly INAVA 120 has set the stage and really, you know, hit the bar right. And it's very exciting that we have something better to offer for otherwise a very poor prognostic population.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, supported by Genentech. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.